Bhavitaikas Tvatatmajaha Harshashoka Padastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yayo Ataha Nirvitam Rajan Bhavitaikas Tvatatmajaha Harshashoka Padastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yayo. Rajan Bhavitaikas Tavatmaja Ashashoka Padastavyam Iti Brahma Sutoyayo Atahani Patim Rajan Bhavitaikas Maja Ashashoka Padastavyam Iti Brahma Sutoyayo Atahana Patim Rajan Bhavitaikas Tvatatmaja Ashashoka Padastavyam Iti Brahma Sutoyayo Atahana Patim Rajan Bhavitaikas Tvatatmaja Ashashoka Padastavyam Iti Brahma Sutoyayo Thereafter, Aha said, Nipitim, unto the king, Rajan, O King Chitraketu, Bhavita, there will be Eka, one, Tava, your Atmajaha, son, Harshashoka, jubilation and lamentation. Brother, who will give Tobyam unto you? Iti, thus, Brahma Suta, Angira Rishi, the son of Lord Brahma, Yayo, left. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. You want to chant it responsively? Why not? Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word harsha means jubilation and shoka means lamentation. The king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. He accepted it to mean that there would certainly be jubilation because of the birth of his future son, but that he would be the king's only son and, being very proud of his great wealth and empire, would not be very obedient to his father. Thus, the king was satisfied, thinking, "Let there be a son. It does not matter if he is not very obedient." In Bengal, there is a proverb that instead of having no material uncle, it is better to have a maternal uncle who is blind. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. The great sage Chanaka Pandit says, "Korta putrena jatena yona vidvana dharmake kanena cho kusa kimba chakshus padaiva kevalam." What is the use of a son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye, which always causes suffering. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude was represented in the history of King Chitraketu. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshushunmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Shri Chaitanya Manavrishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapandantikam. Ataha Nirptim Rajan Vavitaikas Tavatmaja Hashashoka Vadastobhyam Iti Brahma Suto Jayo. Thereafter the great sage told the king, "O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation." The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. So this whole chapter is about Chitraketu's material desire. It leads up to some good stuff, some good responses, some good instructions later on. But here we see that he is very anxious to have a son. He's got millions of wives, it's noted here. Millions of wives. My God. Krishna had 16,108 wives, and Chitraketu had millions of wives. What was the difference? Krishna, every one of his wives was completely satisfied, thinking that Krishna was only with her. And he was taking care of all of them. They all had their own situation, and there was no cause for envy or any kind of dissatisfaction in their minds, right? And the Vedas, the Vedic scriptures tell us that, you know, having multiple wives is okay. It's quite okay. Not for us. For those people. In this age, it's not recommended. Prabhupada did not recommend it. Although we do see in some communities, it's still prevalent, this kind of, more than one wife. Anyway, Chitraketu had millions of wives, but he didn't have the same shakti. He wasn't Krishna, he couldn't satisfy them all. And we'll see that's actually the cause of his lamentation. He's thinking that, well, it's okay, you know. Why does he want to have a son? Why are people so eager to have sons? In a material sense, that's that, as we see in the, you know, sun, we have to have a sun. Why? Because the sun is the one who will offer the pinda, who will offer the sacrifice, the in order to free that living entity and push him on his way. So if you have a daughter, then they can't do that. Technically they're not able to offer the pinda. So that's why they're very eager, these materialists. Because if you're a devotee, it doesn't matter. Son, daughter, it doesn't matter. As long as you're a devotee, and as long as you can make them devotees, it's immaterial. It's immaterial. It's not important. But for materialists, it's very important for them. Those who understand how things work. In the West, they don't understand, they don't really care. But at least those who understand how things work, they want to have a son, so that that son can free them by offering, free them and the ancestors, the forefathers, by offering pinda. So the king here, Prabhupada said, he's overwhelmed with joy. He's called Angira, he's asked for his mercy. He's a big sage, son of Lord Brahma. He's come there, he's offered his mercy, he performed a sacrifice, and he's given the fruit of that sacrifice to the foremost wife. Her name is Krita Dyuti, right? So she's the foremost wife. She gets I guess it was sweet rice. That was the offering that was mentioned. And so by that sacrifice, she's able to conceive a son. We saw also it was Lord Ram's father, his wives, they got portions, half, quarter, something like that. So then the different wives had Ram, Lakshman, and Bharat, Shatrughna. So this is quite usual in you know, some sacrifices held, and the the fruit of that sacrifice, the prasad from that sacrifice, is given to the wives so that they can conceive sons. So here, only one son, only one wife out of the millions of his wives got the food offered in the yajna. And so, you know, that's going to cause problems as we move forward. That's going to cause problems for the king, but he doesn't care. The sage has already mentioned that this son, you're going to get a son, but he's going to cause jubilation and lamentation. And the king's he's not thinking, and there's no opportunity to question the sage. The sage left. So he's thinking, well, he's going to be the only son, so he's going to be puffed up, he's going to be disobedient. Anyway, it doesn't matter. He's not worried about it. Blind uncle is better than no uncle. That's what the Prabhupada mentions. It's a Bengali proverb. A blind uncle is better than no uncle. So he said a son, even though he's going to be disobedient, doesn't matter. At least I'll have a son. So Chanaka obviously doesn't agree with that. And we also don't necessarily agree with that. because there's another putra ki jena ki bole ota. No, that's not what I was thinking of. It's like the sun and then urine. Mut. Ah. It's like a son who is not qualified, who is not a devotee, is just like urine. Useless. Thrown away. So that's our understanding. So as parents, as fathers, our duty is not to just allow, like he's thinking, well, it's okay, I'll let him be. Let him be disobedient. Let him be, puffed up. It doesn't matter. But actually his duty is different. His duty is to ensure that his son is properly trained so that he becomes a jewel of his family, which means devotee, right? If he's properly trained, means he'll become a devotee of the Lord. And if he's a devotee of the Lord, then he'll purify not only his father, his mother, but generations. Pinda and all those things, they don't matter. And the same goes for a daughter. It's not different, because this pinda thing is not relevant for devotees. Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy. If you're engaged in devotional service, you don't have to worry about any other works, any other duties, karma, because they're all automatically taken care of. It's not a concern for devotees. The concern for devotees is to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. How? By serving the devotees, by engaging in service to the Lord, by hearing the descriptions, hearing the philosophy, understanding the philosophy and executing that. In that way, of course, chanting the holy names of the Lord, that's our yajna. So these are the things that we focus on, and these are the things we train our children in order that they also can perfect their lives. Actually, I'm counting on my grandson. Prabhupada said, your children's children. And that's what he told us. Our children's children. So my sons are doing okay, they're pretty good. But his children, their children, they'll be the real, we're aspiring devotees, you know. We're not really devotees. We call ourselves devotees, but anyway, I'm speaking for myself. I'm aspiring to be a devotee. But I think my grandson, according to Prabhupada's words, and his words can't be wrong, he'll be a devotee. So I'm counting on him to lift me out of this mire. But Chitraketu, he was just concerned about having a son who could offer pinda for him. And he didn't care. He wasn't concerned with the lamentation that had been mentioned, and which is foolish, really. But what to do? He was fachadad. I don't know if you know that word, fachadad. Confused. He was confused and he was overwhelmed, Prabhupada says. He overwhelmed with joy because the sage told him that he's going to have a son. And even though he heard it's going to be a cause of lamentation, he just dismissed that. So Prabhupada says, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he's useless. And this is a sad fact of this case. This attitude is represented in the history of Chitraketu, and this whole chapter is about that. So, any questions, comments, elaborations?
Maharaj's words, so he assumed that his son might be disobedient or something like that. So this, it happens to us, at least it happens to me, that we assume sometimes amongst equals, that might not be so much to concern, although maybe yes also, amongst equals we may assume this person is saying this, but maybe it's another very different what that person sees from what I am seeing. And it also happens with juniors in relations with elders, you know, that the senior devotees are speaking and one assumes certain things that may have nothing to do with the vision of the advanced devotee. So how can we get rid of this tendency to assume, excuse me for my pronunciation,
that's not very difficult at all, because Rupa Goswami has given us the answer to that. He says how devotees are supposed to interact with each other. He gives this is how it should be. Dadati pratigrinati bhuyam akyati prichati bhungte bojayate chaiva sat vinim priti lakshana. So these six activities, interactions, are required amongst devotees. So the one that you mentioned, I'm going to assume that, or I'm thinking like this, it's not necessary. It's fruitless. What you do is you approach and you inquire submissively, you inquire confidentially, and you hear confidentially. And then you can understand, Prabhu, you said that and I'm thinking like this, but can you please tell me, am I misunderstanding, or whatever the case may be. And they may confirm what you were thinking. Yeah, you're a rascal. It's true, I think like that. They may confirm what you were thinking or not. It doesn't, but at least you don't have to speculate. You can understand, and then you can try to rectify, try to do something about it. So there's no reason to assume. There's no, in the Sangha of devotees, we don't have to be on the mental platform, he's thinking like that, why is he thinking like that? You just approach submissively and inquire that what's the issue, what's the problem, and you reveal your mind in confidence and you hear confidentially. But it's mentioned confidentially, you know, and that's important also because it's important because if we don't have the faith that this discussion is going to be confidential, then we're not going to reveal our minds in full. Oh, but if I tell him I'm having this problem, then everyone's going to know, and I'll become infamous. Everyone will know I'm a rascal. So better I don't speak. And then if we don't speak, if we don't reveal our minds, it stays inside and it causes more problems for us. We need to be able to reveal our minds and talk about the problems that we're having in Krishna consciousness, the issues that we're facing. And we have to be able to do that confidently. We have to have faith that the person that we're revealing our minds to is going to keep it confidential and help us rather than, you know, something else. So that confidential part is also very important. It's mentioned, guhyam. It's very, that means confidential, hidden discussions. So these discussions are important for devotees. You have to have people, you have to have devotees who you can approach with full confidence and tell them anything. And then hear from them, you know, what you can do to rectify the whatever issue it is, whatever problem you are having. And we can see very clearly that those of you who have been around, you see that those devotees who are not able to do that, who don't have that facility, they have a lot of difficulty. Even senior devotees, so-called senior devotees, who became so senior that they didn't have anyone who they could reveal their minds in confidence to. And it's a shame, because it's necessary and required. And devotees do that. You know, right up to Rupa Goswami, he wasn't just talking to us, it's for all devotees. These are the exchanges, and they're important. Otherwise, why did he write them down for us? They're very important. Nectar of Instruction. Very, very important book for devotees to study. And Prabhupada gives lots of, instruction, direction there, amplifies what Rupa Goswami is talking about. And it's a very important book for devotees. Is it okay, Mataji? Anyone else? Hare Krishna. Can you pass the mic to that Mataji behind you? Thank you.
Hare Krishna, I'm wondering, is there any hope for those aspiring devotees whose children may not necessarily want to take devotional service so seriously?
I couldn't really hear what you were saying.
Is there any hope for those aspiring devotees whose children may not want to take devotional service so seriously?
Is there any hope, Mataji's asking, is there any hope for aspiring devotees whose children don't take up Krishna consciousness? Is that what you said? Yeah. Of course there's hope for you. But it means you have to work more. You can't rely on them to help you out. So you will have to help them out. So that makes you more responsible, actually. If you become fully Krishna consciousness, fully Krishna conscious, then you can liberate past and future, your progeny. So definitely there's hope, more responsibility on your behalf, You have to be more serious. You can't be like me, lackadaisical, and just rely on others. Yeah? So, there's hope for everyone who takes up this path. And Krishna, you know, is very kind. You take one step towards Him, He'll take 10 steps towards you. So, you know, just follow the process that Prabhupada gave us, and you know, you'll perfect your life. But we have to work at it. You know, we have to actually work at it and keep it up. Keep going. Keep doing it. Yeah, it's very easy to become lackadaisical. Oh yeah, I'm a devotee, you know. And that our rounds don't become very we're not very serious with our sadhana, and we're not very serious with our service. Or we use our service as an excuse to not have good sadhana. So, oh, I'm too busy. Too busy. I don't have time to read, or I don't have time to chant my rounds. That's unfortunate. Although here in Mayapur, Prabhupada, I don't know, Jananagas Prabhu may remember, but one time Prabhupada was walking down the wall, down along the wall. And there used to be some machines down there, weaving machines, hand weaving machines. And there, some devotees, some of the Bengali new devotees, they used to make cloth down there, like this. And one morning when Prabhupada was walking down there, somebody said, "Well, Prabhupada, these men," it was, you know, they were working there, and somebody said, "Prabhupada, they're working, shouldn't they be chanting? Shouldn't they be chanting their rounds, the devotees?" And Prabhupada said, "That's their chanting." Do you remember that? Prabhupada said, "That's their chanting." Anyway, I'm not saying that that's for you. That was for them. That was a specific instruction for a specific... but it was interesting that he said that. They were new, and they were actually refugees from Bangladesh, as I recall. Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna, thank you. I just had one question. We always say about how if you have a devotee in the family, that liberates, is it 24 generations in the past, 24 generations in the future? Now, does that mean that when you get liberated, they get liberated immediately, or does it mean that they get an opportunity to become devotees? They still have to work through the process.
Well, liberation, if you're talking liberation is the first platform of entering into devotional service, real devotional service. At the moment we're engaged in all, you know, Mishra Bhakti or something, but Prabhupada states that liberation is the platform where one can enter into devotional service. So, and even where, if we perfect ourselves in this lifetime, we don't go to Goloka, we go to Gokul. We go to somewhere in the material world where Krishna is having his pastimes, and we go there and we get trained up by his eternal associates to then go on, right? So I would since that's our situation, I would take it that that's also the situation. If we reach that platform, then that's what's going to happen to those people. They'll get that same opportunity that we're having. It's said that it's a little hard to kind of appreciate or understand. Even said that when Mahaprabhu was on the planet, when he came 500 some odd years ago, everyone in the universe, everyone at that time got liberated. He came. Now there was people in England, or you know, red Indians, you know, Indian like Aboriginals, in they're also present. And if everyone got liberated, they also got liberated. What, they didn't even know anything about him or what he was doing or anything, but it says that the whole place was liberated. So it's an opportunity, I think, I would say. Same opportunity that we have when we reach that stage of liberation. We can enter into the nectar of devotion, real service at the lotus feet of Radha Krishna and his devotees, and get trained up by those associates in whatever service it is that we're supposed to do. That's my understanding. I don't, someone else may have a different view or presentation. The floor is open. Janani Vasprabhu.
I agree with Mataji, what she's saying. It appears they get the opportunity to come into contact with devotees and start their devotional service or continue their devotional service. Like it says, if you take a bath in the Ganga, or you know, you visit this holy place, you go to this theatre, you get liberated. So it's kind of a fact, you become purified. As soon as you leave the place, like you go to the Ganga, you lose all your sins, are gone. As soon as you come out, you start bringing everything back again, you know, like you start identifying with the body, bring out all the different identities back again. But for a moment, you were actually liberated. So it appears that the path of liberation is open. How much you want to take and how long you want to take, that's up to you. You may take a few births on the way, or if you're more serious, you could go straight back, but the actual path is open of liberation. To accept the statements of the Shastra. I just heard from a God brother of mine. He said that, you know, like the dependents, the wife especially, the husband and wife, the wife takes equal amount of the husband's pious activities, and she doesn't take any sinful activity, resolve any sinful activities he performs, only the good activities. But she doesn't get the bhakti of the husband. The bhakti is exclusive to you, it's exclusive to me, it's exclusive to everyone. It's how everyone has this personal relationship with Krishna. That bhakti can't come from someone else. The guru is there, everyone is helping. They take you out of the material world, out of the modes of material nature. But ultimately, we have to make that step in ourselves. It has to come from us, not someone behind us pushing us and saying, you go back. It has to actually come from us. So. That's the first time I had heard that. That although the family get so much benefit, piety and all that, the actual bhakti they don't get. That exclusive reach.
Otherwise, otherwise there's no independence, right? So because of the because Krishna is supremely independent, we're also independent. So that final decision is ours alone. We have to do it. Yes. All right. But opportunity is a lot. Opportunity is a lot because living entities are rotting in this material world. There was that devotee of Mahaprabhu said something like 10,000 or 10 million births or something. He can come. Who was that? I can't remember.
Kunda. After 10 million
births. He started dancing. Only 10 million births. Wow. He was in ecstasy. Because eternally tied. Nitya Bada. So you say, well, in 10 million births, that's the number. And he was dancing in ecstasy. Oh, in 10 million births, I'm going to be able to go back and be in the association of Mahaprabhu. Hari Bol. He was very happy. So, you know, we talk, you know, we're thinking, well, at the end of this life, I'm going back, or I want to go back at the end of this life. Well, you know, that would be nice. That would be nice, but we're on the path. We're on the path. We're in the shower. We're taking the shower. We're cleaning. That's already a huge thing, big thing. I'm 5 minutes over. Please excuse me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.